This is Iron Mike Stedman, and as always, I want to thank you for tuning into our show, the legendary Dog Whistle Brandon. When I first took the leap in entrepreneurship full-time, back in the summer of 2018, one of the first books I was recommended was Alan Dibbs' The One-Page Marketing Plan: Get New Customers, Make More Money, and Stand Out from the Crowd. In the book, Alan gives a step-by-step process for creating a marketing plan that converts warm prospects into paying customers. I use Alan's framework from the book for my podcast, clients I work with, and my own personal business ventures, including Ironbound Boxing and The Misfits. A few months ago, I signed up for the One-Page Marketing Plan online course, which sparked me to finally reach out to Alan and invite him on the show to talk through his framework and also discuss his more recent book, Lean Marketing: More Leads, More Profit, and Less Marketing. I feel like there's a lot of woo-woo when it comes to marketing, but at the end of the day, it needs to be sustainable and put money in the bank, which is what Alan and I discuss on today's show. Before we jump in, make sure you subscribe to my newsletter at the link in the show notes. I'd also greatly appreciate it if you purchased a copy of my first book, Black Veteran Entrepreneur: Validate Your Business Model, Build Your Brand, and Step into Greatness, available on Amazon at the link in the show notes as well. All right, enough of me talking. Gunny, you know what to do.
Yo, saddle up, lock and load.
You're listening to Dog Whistle Branding, brought to you by the team at Ironbound Media and The Misfits, a branding and design studio that unfucks brands. I'm your host, Iron Mike Stedman, the godfather of Dog Whistle Branding and co-founder of The Misfits, along with my design partner in crime, Drew O'Brien. Dog Whistle Branding is sponsored by JobPaths and Mission Plus, a tech platform that helps nonprofit organizations upgrade their websites and leverage technology to deliver services online. You can learn more at missionplus.com. All right, get out your pen and paper and get ready to build a dog whistle brand. Saddle up, lock and load. Mr. Alan Dibb, welcome to Dog Whistle Branding.
Hey, such a pleasure to be out.
Alan, I just want to say thank you. I already talked to him about this before it went live, but I've been a big fan of the One-Page Marketing Plan for a long time. And I think I came across probably 5 years ago or so. And more recently, something told me to go to your website and take your One-Page Marketing Plan course. And I get a lot of value out of entrepreneurs such as yourself who take the time to create really good content. And I'm not just talking about the One-Page Marketing Plan course, but a lot of the accelerator videos from the master classes that you've given on how to set up your email marketing automation, how you set up your sales funnel, how to set up all these different things. That has been immensely valuable for me. I'm a bit of an autodidact. And recently, I was telling you, I spun out my design studio, and I have been getting so much inbound on marketing support. And your tool, the One-Page Marketing Plan, more recently, the TAP, you know, tools, assets, and people framework or processes, and then the scoreboard has just been absolutely amazing. And so instantly I said, you know, I want to show some gratitude, and I want to invite you on the podcast to introduce yourself to our audience of underdogs and misfits and talk about the One-Page Marketing Plan and your new book, Lean Marketing. So really excited to have you here today.
Awesome. So such a pleasure to be on. And, you know, congratulations for implementing, because so many people will read a book or do a course or buy a course and then unfortunately do nothing with it. So, I mean, hats off to you for implementing. That's a huge, huge thing. And very, very few people do that. And that's really where the gains are made. So good on you for that.
So let's talk about the state of marketing, because one thing, and I was telling you too, is like, I never really viewed myself as a marketer per se, but people see a lot of what I do and they see the impact that it's able to make. But when I talk to entrepreneurs now, even some that have raised capital, it's the Wild West, mm-hmm. You know? And I feel like as a bootstrapper, I had to learn the hard way about how to go out and get customers. I couldn't rely on somebody to save me. And I'm just so amazed when I meet a lot of these startup founders these days and how they're approaching marketing by just spending a bunch of money to run ads, even though they have no idea who their perfect customer is. They have no way of nourishing them. They don't have any system set in place. And so it's just, it's kind of mind boggling to me a little bit.
Yeah, totally. 100%. So many people just see, you know, what's happening in the marketing space. And, you know, there's just, it's always more. You read a book And it's like, okay, I've got five more things to do on my to-do list. You do a course, okay, there's another five strategies or tactics I've got to take. You talk to the advertising agency, you need to spend more to get to make more impact. And so one of the things that I saw is that the best and most sophisticated marketers in the world, their marketing is actually very lean. The list of stuff that they do is actually much, much smaller than the list of stuff that they don't do. And so that they have found the small hinges that really swing big doors. And so some of the stuff that you alluded to before we even came on this call is, you know, have you got your messaging right? Have you got your tools, your assets, your processes dialed in before we start adding fuel to the fire? Because a lot of what we do in marketing is amplification, right? But if you're amplifying a message that's a crappy message, it's kind of like if I'm a bad singer, which I am a bad singer, by the way, if I use the amplifier, that makes things worse, not better. Now I'm just a loud, bad singer, right? And so a lot of the things that people are doing from a marketing perspective, they're trying to amplify a crappy message. And so the message that's not landing with their audience, a message that's not directed, a message that's not something that people actually want. And so they're going to spend a lot of money amplifying, and, you know, agencies and all the pay-per-click platforms and everything like that will happily take their money, but they're not going to get the result that they want. So a lot of what we're doing is really getting back to basics, getting back to fundamentals. So you mentioned you look like a pretty fit guy. You mentioned that you run a boxing gym, right? So one of the, you know, and a few years ago, I was very overweight, very weak. Like I would hurt my back just getting the groceries out of the car. Now I'm deadlifting double my body weight. I'm leaned up. And how did I do those things? Well, I concentrated on the basics. You know, you've got to do a deadlift. You've got to do a squat. You've got to do bench press. And you've got to do those things regularly. Now, they're basic things. They're not things that kind of no one has ever thought of. There's no, you know, this is like mind-blowing stuff. This is just basic stuff that you've got to do on a regular basis. And over time, you're going to get a really good result. And the same is true of your marketing. We want to build your marketing muscle. What are the basic things that we need to do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis to get those outsized results, you know? And it's not that quick fix, that magic bullet, that funnel tool or whatever. Just like if someone came to your gym and said, hey, I want to get fit. So, hey, I bought this $10,000 machine and that's going to change me overnight. You'll say, dude, you're crazy. Like, you need to get back to basics.
One of the things that I'm curious to learn from you, and I know your origin story around, you know, coming up with the one-page marketing plan, but, you know, I'm big on frameworks, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of frameworks out there. People tell no, like, and trust, et cetera. But where did you see the opportunity specifically with the one-page marketing plan to just go a little bit deeper and guide people along the way instead of just the generic, oh, they need to know, like, and trust you? I feel like you have a really good system. I feel like it's different from a lot of the stuff that's out there. And when you implement it, it 100% works.
Yeah, totally. So the one-page marketing plan, the origin of that is it was a process that I used with my clients long before it was a book. I got it out into book form because I wanted to reach more people. But really where that came from was just expensive experience. Over 10 years, I studied marketing. And when I say I studied marketing, I didn't study at a university or whatever. I was trying to implement it in my own business because I was struggling. I was like, I was a dead broke IT geek. I was trying to figure out, how do I get more clients in the door? It was super frustrating because I was really good at what I did. That's the thing. Like, there's nothing more frustrating than when you see dumber people making more money than you. You're like, what in the heck is going on? And so that's what I was trying to figure out. I was trying to figure out what am I doing wrong? I'm a nice guy. I'm really knowledgeable at what I do. The clients that I have really love what I'm doing, but I'm just not getting enough clients in the door. And so I spent about 10 years learning with trial and error, mostly error. And you know, I attended every seminar, I read every book, and I got a little piece of nugget from each. You know, so I would attend a seminar and I'd get one idea, or I'd read a book and I'd get a few ideas or whatever. But there was nothing that I could see that would take someone like me who had no idea with marketing to, you know, having a marketing plan and having clarity around what to do next. What do I do next from a marketing perspective? What's step one? What's step two? What's step three? So I needed something that would take me from zero to hero. And really, that's what I put together with the one-page marketing plan. I think that's why it's resonated with a lot of people, because most people, most entrepreneurs, they've not had marketing training, they've not had marketing experience. And so if there's a guide that can take you from zero to having a good working knowledge of marketing, that's a game changer. Everything changes in your business. You now get lead flow. You've now got people coming to you. You're dealing with ideal customers instead of haggling over price and trying to communicate your value. So all of those things make a massive, massive difference. And so I think that's why the book has resonated with a lot of people.
Now, some of our listeners may or may not be familiar with the one-page marketing plan. I would love if you would go over it briefly for us, but also talk about how you've integrated, for those of us that have taken the course, the TAP framework, which is game changer, million-dollar insight there, and then also the scoreboard.
Yeah, perfect. So the TAP framework is really the tools, the assets, and the processes. So when I look at what are the things that are going to be the biggest game changers for our clients, for us included, I look for leverage points. Now, what leverage is when you put one unit in and you get one or more units back out. So one unit of time, one unit of energy, one unit of money. So if I can put a dollar in and get more than a dollar out, that's leverage at work. And so that's a real theme of the new book, Lean Marketing. It's about how do we create those leverage. And I have a section in each book that covers each of those tools, assets, and processes. They're the three main sections of the book. Now, tools are things like your CRM system. They're like, now AI is a massive tool that gives you leverage from a marketing perspective. They're your content management system. They're all of those tools. So, you know, if I wanted to smash down a brick wall, maybe I could do it with my bare hands, but it would take a long time. It would be very painful. And I may or may not be able to do it. But if I had the right tool, if I had a sledgehammer, I could do that in a couple of minutes with no problem. So the exact same thing is true from a marketing perspective. If we have the right tools, then we can get massive leverage. We can amplify the force of our inputs. We can make our impact stronger. So that's leverage point number one. Point number two is assets. Assets are what separate the rich from the poor, you know, and a lot of people don't like that, right? But it's a reality, right? Rich people derive most of their income from assets, not from labor. So if you own stocks, you get dividends. If you own property, you can get rental income. So exact same thing is true from a marketing perspective. If you have marketing assets, you can generate inbound lead flow. You can generate interest. You can generate opportunities. You can generate people coming to you and asking to work with your program. Now, what's a marketing asset? For example, in my business, it's my books. The reason that you and I are on here, right? You reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you be on the podcast?" And I said, "Yes, of course." And that happens every single day. I get people reaching out and saying, "Hey, would you be on the podcast? Would you come speak at our event? Can I join your coaching program or whatever else?" And it's because I have an asset out there. That asset is generating lead flow and prospects and revenue every single day, just like if I owned a property or just like if I owned stocks or whatever, that would just generate dividends. So assets give you massive, massive leverage. And the third leverage point is processes. Like I alluded to earlier, marketing is a process, not an event. Meaning it's not just once and done. We don't just do marketing once and it's done. It's something that we do daily, weekly, monthly. And it's like compound interest. So you can, over time, if you invest, but you have compound interest working for you, your investments just, you know, skyrocket over time. The exact same thing is true from a marketing perspective. The stuff that we do daily, weekly, monthly, the things that seem boring and the things that seem like they're not really working in the beginning, if we keep doing them, if we keep compounding them over time, then that creates massive, massive leverage. So a large part of that process is your team, your people. What are your people doing daily, weekly, monthly? So between those three, they're three of the biggest leverage points from a marketing perspective, and they can make all the difference when it comes to your marketing.
I'm smirking because I've listened to Alan talk on a podcast where everybody says email's dead. And Alan's like, we've generated millions of dollars through email marketing. I'm one of those guys, right? Like I read the book, been on your email list for like 5 years. And like, you know, I read your stuff. I don't always read every single email, but you stay top of mind in my mind. Yeah. And so then all of a sudden I'm looking at that course and little do I realize I've been nurtured for like 5 years, you know? So it's an easy, just whatever. And I just think that's so valuable because I think, and I do want to kind of briefly go over the actual one-page marketing plan for people, but that nurture is so important. And, you know, as I've been getting hired more and more as like a fractional CMO, which I want to get your advice on towards the end, is I go into these companies and I'm asking like, hey, what are we using to nurture prospects? Nobody got an email newsletter, Alan. Nobody. They're just relying on LinkedIn. And I'm like, yo, we got to get off of LinkedIn. We can't just be on Instagram. These algorithms change. This stuff is rented land. And I'm noticing, I'm talking about companies that got hundreds of millions of dollars that you go into their marketing and you think they've got it figured out. But I'm like, yo, how are we nurturing prospects again? And they're like, so I just thought that was funny that you always say that. And I'm definitely one of those people on your list that got nurtured for like 5 years.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, people say email's dead, nobody reads emails, all of that sort of thing. But then when you ask someone who's busy, you say, what's one of your biggest time sucks? What's at the top of the list? Email. Like I'm doing email all day. I spend hours on email. So, you know, nobody's reading email, yet everybody's busy with email for some reason. So it doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, 100%. Can we go through the one-page marketing plan real brief, just the 9 quick squares?
Of course. So the one-page marketing plan, it's if you visualize a single page, it's divided into 9 squares, and it's 3 blocks of 3. So the first block is the before phase. So the before phase is when you're working with people who basically don't know who you are, don't know that you exist. So we call those prospects, or you can call them before phase. Or you can call this the traction phase, whatever it is. So there's really 3 steps in that phase. First of all, we need to select our ideal target market. We want to figure out who do we actually want to work with on a day-to-day basis? Who are our ideal customers? And the temptation for a lot of entrepreneurs is to say, everyone, hey, I'm an accountant, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, whatever else. And the temptation is to say, hey, it's everybody, right? Where I can help everybody. And so it's counterintuitive, and every fiber of your being will be to try and widen the net. But really, we're in a world where things are highly specialized. Like if you look at your Google browser history or your browser history, you'll notice that your search results are very, very specific. You're not typing in car. You're typing in BMW X7 versus Range Rover or whatever, or you're typing in a dermatologist in Brooklyn, in downtown Brooklyn. You're not just typing in doctor, right? So people are looking for things that are very specific. So you want to make sure that you're connecting with your ideal target market, someone who has both the willingness and ability to pay, someone who you enjoy working with, someone who's going to value what you do, someone who's going to pay you a lot of money for what you do. Because we've all experienced clients who are just painful to work with. They never don't pay on time. They always haggle about price. They're difficult to work with, always want to speak to the CEO and all of that. And then we've worked with those dream clients who just, you know, they're fans. They love what you do. They're happy to pay. Whenever you release a new product, they're the first in line. And so we want more of those ideal clients, and we want, you know, ideally none or very few of those suboptimal clients. So we want to figure out who are our people, who are our optimal people that we want to work with. And then, so that's really step one. Everything is built on that. That's the foundation. Then we go into the messaging phase. The messaging phase is all about figuring out what's a message that's actually going to connect with our ideal target market. Because now that we've identified our ideal target market, we want to figure out what's something that's going to make them say, yes, I want that. Tell me more about that. I want to know more. I want more details. I want to, you know, I want to enter your world and find out more. And then the third phase is connecting your message with your target market. And we call that media. So how are you going to reach them? Are you going to reach them on email? Are you going to reach them on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on through SEO searches, through whatever, through podcasts, whatever it is. So we want to find out where does our target market exist, you know, and how are we going to reach them? And your media tends to be your most expensive part of your marketing process. So you want to make sure that you've got a message that you're amplifying correctly. You've got that people want to hear, and that you've got a target audience who actually wants to receive that message. So that's the before phase. So hopefully, if you've done the before phase well, you've now got someone who's kind of raised their hand and said, look, I'm interested in what you've got to offer. I'm interested in what you're doing. Tell me more. So they become now a lead, someone who's raised their hand. And when I say raised their hand, it could be something like they've opted in on your website, they've called your office, they've sent you an email, they've sent you an inquiry somehow. So whatever your lead capture mechanism is. And so that moves us into the during phase. So how do we take them from being a lead to being someone who's a paying customer? So that's the during phase. The during phase, we want to capture those leads. Why do we want to capture those leads? Because what we know is that everyone has hundreds of browser tabs open every single day, right? If you, myself included, right? So I may have full intention to buy something. I'm searching online, I'm looking at price shopping or comparing the products or specs or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? You know, you get interrupted, an email comes through or a phone call comes through or whatever. I'll get back to that later. And guess what happens? You never get back to that later, right? You get busy, something else happens or whatever. So if we haven't captured those leads, we have no way of reconnecting with them down the track in the future. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're connecting with those leads and putting them into our database, our CRM system. Then what are we going to do? Exactly as you talked about earlier, we're going to nurture those leads. That's really the fifth phase of the one-page marketing plan. We're going to nurture those leads. We're going to give them a lot of value. We're going to help them in advance of them paying us, right? A lot of what marketing is trying to convince people that when they buy from us, their world will become much better. And hopefully that's true. It should be true. But a lot of it is trying to convince people that, hey, your life is going to be better once you buy from me. Now, really good, sophisticated marketers have figured out that instead of just telling people, let's show them, let's actually help them in advance. Let's give them so much value for free that we stimulate their imagination as to what kind of value they're going to get when they become a paying customer. So, and that really naturally moves us into the sixth block, which is all about sales. The sales is really converting the people who you've captured, who you've nurtured, who you've reached out to with your message and your target market. And it's really about turning them into paying clients. And so if we've done the first five phases of the one-page marketing plan well, sales should become really, really easy and frictionless. And I mean, you've been through our nurturing process, and I don't know how you felt about the sales process, but I don't think it was pushy. I don't think it was someone cold calling you and saying, hey, man, you should buy this right now, and all of this sort of pushy sales tactics. It was just the time was right. Something was right. Something triggered in your life, in your business. The time was right, and you were ready to buy, and you went ahead. Now, if 5 years ago, when you first opted into our mailing list, if we were really doing the hard sell, really, really push it, you would have unsubscribed, forgotten all about us, never been in our ecosystem ever again, and who knows, you know, how, if we would ever connect again. So really, if we've done the first five steps of the one-page marketing plan well, sales should become easy and frictionless. So a lot of people feel like, okay, great, we've made the sale, so marketing is over now, right? And that really is the furthest thing from the truth. Really, the money is made in the after phase. So how do we take someone who's bought from us once and get them to have an amazing experience, to buy more stuff from us, you know, an upsell or a cross sell or the next level of version of whatever they've got? And then how do they become referrers? How do we get them to spread the word about us? And really, that's what the after phase is about. The after phase is delivering a world-class experience, increasing customer lifetime value, and then orchestrating and stimulating referrals. So in a nutshell, they're the nine steps of the one-page marketing plan.
What I like about your framework too is that, and it goes back to what I said before, it's almost like the lean startup movement has taken over and people have skipped the part of like, you actually have to build a sustainable business. Like you can't just make a product or service in isolation and expect people to buy it. And so I think, you know, you emphasize direct marketing, right? So you send something out, it forces someone to take an action, and then you have this whole framework, and it works. Like if you use it, it actually works. I want to go back to newsletters again.
Yes.
What is the process like for you to set that up? How much time does it take to really set the foundation up first and then get it a little bit automated? Because I kind of call it brilliant in the basics. I'm going to use my Marine Corps language. So come into a company, and I'm like, okay, we definitely need to get some awareness going, but we got to get a newsletter going. But I know that like in the early phases, it's a huge lift to kind of get set up for that. How do you advise people on that?
Yeah, so it is a huge lift and it isn't. So to get started, literally you could do it in a day, right? So you would, if you, it depends what you've got in place already and depends, you know, what, you know, what sort of infrastructure you've got in place. But let's assume you've got nothing, right? So what we want to do is we need a CRM system. So, and people always ask, hey, what's the best CRM system or what's the best email system? And I would say, look, it really doesn't matter. Choose one. Best CRM system is the one that you'll actually use. There's many. There's, you know, ConvertKit is a very simple one. We use HubSpot at the moment. We used to use Entreport. That's all pretty good. There's tons of them out there. Really, that really is the thing that matters the least, right? Because they've all got very similar features. So you need a system where you're going to have your email database. Then we want to set up some automation. So when someone subscribes to our list, we want to kind of think like a chess master. We want to think five moves ahead. So for example, if your feature, if your product or your service has five features, I would set up five emails that talk about one feature each, right? So the first one might be talking about, you know, how well your agency service converts for dentists or whatever. The second one might be how to increase appointment bookings. The third one might be talking about no-shows, how do you deal with no-shows and things like that. So you really want to think like a chess master and have each move kind of planned out. And now you, when someone opts in, you've got a sequence that goes out to them over time. Now, as you get more sophisticated, you can add to that sequence, add to it. And especially if what you do is evergreen, you could have a sequence that runs a year or 2 years or whatever. And that way, everyone who enters your ecosystem is now set up to receive communication from you on an ongoing basis till the end of time, potentially. Now, so that's automations. But then you can also set up things that are one-time emails. For example, let's say you've got a promotion, let's say it's Black Friday or whatever else. That's when you can do an email broadcast to your list, send out a message, hey, it's Black Friday, you know, we've got such and such promotion or whatever else. So you can set it up really, really easily. Now, the bit that's going to take you time is really figuring out what kind of messages is connecting with my audience. What do I want people to do as a result of getting my email? So when someone gets my email, do I want them to book a consultation session? Do I want them to hit reply and reply with something? Do I want them to go to a landing page? Do I want them to add to cart? So really thinking through what do we actually want? And my suggestion is to always be thinking about just the next step, the next physical, visible action that you want them to take. So, you know, because often we think about what we do as point A, and the end result, which is the person buying, is point B. But really, it's point A and point Z. And in between, there's B, C, D, E, F, right? So if, for example, the final result is someone buying our coaching program, right? Step one may be, okay, them opening the email. Step two is they're clicking the email. So really, that email is selling the click. We're not selling the coaching program. We're selling the click. Now, once they click, the only thing that we're selling at that point is for them to take the next physical, visible action, which might be to book a discovery call. So that landing page will then be talking about one thing, really. It's about, look, you're going to get so much value from this discovery call. You're going to talk to one of our people. We're going to have a look at what you're doing. We're going to go over your business step by step, and we're going to figure out where the optimizations are. So we're selling only the next step. Then on the discovery call, if we find out that, hey, they're potentially an ideal client, well, again, what's the next physical, visible action we want to take? So at every step, we want to be thinking, what's the one next step that I want that person to take? Yes, the final step at some point in time when they're ready to buy might be for them to buy. And you might go through all of those steps literally in a day, right? So you might go take someone from seeing your stuff for the first time and buying on the same day, or it might be, like in your case, over 5 years. So it really doesn't matter. But we're introducing them to our world, we're nurturing them, and we're arriving in their lives at a time when they're ready to buy from us.
Tell me if I'm wrong on this, and this is something I struggle with. I definitely know the benefit of email marketing automation. I think at this point I need to bring somebody in to help me set those up, but I do write to my list. But I kind of do it from more of a thought leadership perspective right now. and I'm right on Substack because it's just so easy for me. But people have been booking on my calendar from it. But I know that like I can potentially be the bottleneck if I don't get a newsletter out on, you know, Wednesday or Friday. Yeah. So like for something like that, do I have my email automation sequence and I can still do my kind of solo thought leadership of like, hey, here's something I'm working on. This is something fresh on my mind, et cetera. Because I really feel like I have a relationship with my audience.
Of course. Of course. And you do have a relationship with your audience. So there's a couple of approaches. So if what you do is evergreen and what you do is evergreen, you could pre-set up an automation sequence that runs over the course of a year or 6 months. And you have those thought leadership pieces. So things like, so, I mean, give me a few examples of some of the kind of emails that you might send. Like what's the contents of an email that you might send?
So we're launching a veteran cigar brand, right? It's pretty badass, right? I can't release the name yet, but it's badass. And so I've just been inviting people into me going through the process of kind of launching this brand. And like, I'm still not the person where I'm like, I just hired somebody to help this kind of get a little bit more manageable on the content calendar side of the house. Sometimes I just wake up, get a nice cup of coffee on a Wednesday morning, write my email. Sometimes it's got a little grammar mistakes, but my audience understands it. So stuff like that.
Okay, perfect. So your story about launching the cigar brand, that's going to be relevant today. That's going to be relevant in 6 months. That's going to be relevant in a year. That's going to be relevant in 2 years, right? So if someone joined, like imagine you sent that email today to your list and someone opts in on your list tomorrow, they will never see that email if you're just sending it as a broadcast. Because that went yesterday and they've opted in today. Whereas if it's part of your evergreen sequence, someone opting in might see it on day two or whenever you've scheduled it in your automated sequence. So if for the emails that are evergreen, I would put them into your email sequence. So create those thought leadership emails, put them into your email sequence, because that way you're really efficiently using that information, that email, because if it's once and done, so like right now, I don't know how big your list is, but let's for argument's sake, let's say you've got 1,000 people on your list. In a year, you might have 20,000 people on your list. So then there's 15,000 people who haven't seen that piece of work that you did. You spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, you thought about the concepts, you put it all together, and it's a really good piece of work, but you've only used it once and only a small portion of your list has ever seen it. So for those kind of things, I would put them into your evergreen long-term nurturing sequence. And then for things that are much more perishable, so for example, let's say you're running a promo or you're running a live event or something like that. You're like, hey, we're going to be in Atlanta in April 25th or whatever. So that's something that you would send as a broadcast because like that's not going to be relevant in 6 months or a year or whatever, right? So you want people to know about that right now and it's not going to be relevant down the track. But for thought leadership type of things, I would have those in an evergreen sequence, especially when you don't have a big team of writers and things like that.
That's great. That's $1 million insight. Thank you so much for that. I invest a lot of money in business coaching. I probably spent over $100,000 in business coaching. I'm sold on the category. I'm a coach myself. And so I know what right looks like. And so that's why I was so excited about your scoreboard that you added to the one-page marketing plan. And I'm like, this guy gets it. Can you talk to our listeners about the importance of that scoreboard?
Yeah. So we created a scorecard to help people assess where they are on the journey. And one of the reasons that I really like scorecards is because it helps people, like a large part of the challenge of the things that we do as consultants and coaches and things like that is help people realize where they've got gaps. Like to us, it's obvious. Like someone comes to you and says, hey, I want to start running ads. I'm going to spend $5,000 a month. And like, yo, whoa, hang on. We need to talk about you. We need to figure out your messaging. We need to figure out, you know, have you got the right audience? All of those sorts of things. And so they don't realize that. They don't see where they've got that gap. It's kind of like when you go to a doctor and, you know, you know that your knee is hurting, but the doctor, you know, will pinch and prod and examine and he'll write, right, okay, looks like you've torn XYZ or whatever else, right? So someone with expertise sees something that someone without expertise does not see. And so for a sales process to be effective, someone has to see that they've got a gap or a pain point or whatever else, like if they don't see. And a scorecard is a really good method for helping people identify where they've got gaps. Because if I do an assessment, if I do a scorecard and I get a 7 out of 20 or whatever, and then the scorecard then goes through and tells me, look, you're strong in these areas, which is great, well done, but here are your weak points and here is why they're weak, then that starts to reveal some of the gaps that they've got in place. But also, once someone gives you a score, what's your natural inclination? Your natural inclination is going to be, hey, I want to improve my score, right? And so often the way that to improve your score is for them to engage with your services and take the next step with you and work with you to fix up some of the areas that they're weak in. So we created that scorecard around the one-page marketing plan to take people through, okay, do you have a clear understanding of your target market? Are you using the right media? Is your messaging? And then, so we'll take them through that yes or no, some of those yes or no questions, figure out where they are. Do you have a team? All of those sort of things. And then we give them a score, show them where they're weak, where they're strong. And that's very helpful for them. Like, you know, if I'm, for example, low energy or something like that, I want to figure out what's causing that. You know, is it a nutrient deficiency? Is it an exercise thing? Is it something, you know, an ailment I've got or whatever? And so that's really, really useful for them. So a lot of what we want to do in the marketing process is be useful to people, like help them figure out how do we get the result that they actually want. So that's part of what we're doing from a scorecard perspective.
One of the things that I've been doing at my company, The Misfits, lately is helping a lot of veterans go from 0 to 1, not just veterans, but the underdogs and misfits in general. So they're trying to find that illustrious product market fit, which a category designer, we don't like that because we create the market for our products. We don't go out there hunting. That's a whole separate story. So what does a good scorecard look like for early stage, small business or startup? What should they be focused on?
So that they should be focused on kind of revealing the pain. Because, you know, like, for example, my wife went to the chiropractor the other day. You know, she's been having a little bit of back pain. And so he assesses her. He goes through, he pushes this, he prods that. He's like, and he starts revealing areas of weakness. He's like, okay, look, looks like your right shoulder, it's a little bit set back or whatever. And so what we need to do is we need to do this exercise to kind of strengthen it or whatever. And then over here, you've got this blah, 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 whatever. He's using the term. But what he's doing is revealing some of the weaknesses, revealing some of the pain points, and then creating a roadmap to get those fixed. Right. Okay. For your shoulder, what we're going to do is you're going to do these five reps of this exercise. You're going to do that 3 times a day, right? For your lower back, what we're going to do is this protocol, this program, you're going to come see me in a week or whatever, right? So what we want to do with the scorecard is to reveal pain. And what we want to do, especially in the questions with the scorecard, is have them to be very clear yes or no questions. Because, like, for example, if you asked a question and said to someone, are you clear about your target market? You know, or how much clarity do you have about your target? Someone might say, yeah, I'm sure I'm clear about my target market. It's everybody, right? Right. But that's not a really great question. So what you want to do is you want to reveal some of the pain points. So a question that you might ask is, for example, have you won any awards for your category of product over the last 90 days or over the last year or whatever? So that's a clear yes or no. I can say, yeah, no, I haven't really been nominated for any awards or whatever. Or have you closed the deal over $10,000 in your category? Again, that's clear, yes or no. Whereas if you ask kind of subjective questions, someone might say, yeah, I think I'm pretty good with marketing, or yeah, I think I'm pretty good with people or whatever. But an objective question would be, hey, have you had someone quit or leave in the last 90 days? Okay, that's very, very, very clear. So that's kind of what you want to do in your scorecard, is have very clear yes or no questions that reveal someone's pain point rather than it be subjective. And then we want to reveal those pain points. We want to show them the gap between where they are and where they want to go.
I need to use that for an assessment. And I apologize, because I think when I was saying scorecard and scoreboard, I was actually referencing metrics. But that's a really nice insight right there. What do metrics look like for these early stage small business and startups? Like, what is the score that they should be focused on the most when they're putting their chart together And, you know, we're putting our tallies. It's like, hey, we record every Friday or something. We got to look and say, hey, are we making progress? What are the metrics that are really good for the early stage?
There are tons of metrics you can monitor, but there are only two that really, really matter more than anything else. And in fact, I could even boil it down to one. In fact, I have a T-shirt with that metric written on it. I probably should have worn that T-shirt. It's LTV is your most important metric, which stands for lifetime value. So how much does a customer spend with you over their lifetime? That is the most important metric above all other metrics. Why is that so important? Because if you can get more value from a customer over time, you can deliver a better experience. You know, a customer who spends a small amount of money with you, well, you're going to have to scrimp and save to kind of get them a result, and it's not going to be very profitable. They're not going to be fun to deal with. You're not going to be able to spend much time or effort on it. But a customer who pays you a lot of money, you're going to be able to get them a great result. It's going to be profitable for you, which will make it enjoyable. You're going to be able to reinvest in that relationship long term. Now, very closely related to LTV is CAC, or customer acquisition cost. How much does it cost you to acquire a customer? So those are the two metrics above all other metrics that you need to worry about. So, for example, if it costs us, you know, in terms of marketing and sales and things like that, on average, to acquire a customer for $1,000, and then over their lifetime value, we make, let's say, $10,000 from that customer. And so now we've got a 10x return on our customer acquisition cost. So if your lifetime value is low, you're going to have to scrimp and save to figure it. You're not going to be able to create a wow experience for them. You're not going to be able to create an experience where they're going to be raving fans, where they're going to refer new business to you, where they're going to write great reviews or whatever. They're going to be like, yeah, I don't know, it was okay. Like, and so those are the two metrics above all else. Now, then we get into kind of other metrics that I call micro metrics. So they're metrics that, you know, click-through rates and ROAS and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, depending on what campaign you run or whatever else, they can be very valuable. But they're mostly valuable in helping you troubleshoot your campaigns. So, for example, if we've got a campaign that's not working, there's only a handful of things that could be going wrong, right? Either someone's not clicking on the ad, or they're not opting in, or if they're opting in, they're not opening the email or not receiving the email, or if they're receiving the email, they're not going to the landing page, they're not going to the sales page, or if they're not going to the sales page, they're not buying, right? So then we go back and troubleshoot. We figure out, okay, what's our open rate? Are people opening the emails? Okay, if the open rate is all good, great. So we don't have a problem with our open rate. So then we go to the landing page. What's our bounce rate? What does that look like? So they're kind of, those micro metrics are helpful in troubleshooting specific campaign issues. But really, like I said, if there are two metrics that you're ever going to look at in your business, it's really CAC and LTV.
Yeah. And on the one-page marketing plan I got from the course, like, again, you break it out. We got the one-page marketing plan, Canva. Yeah. We have the TAP, the Excel doc. And then we have the metrics at the end. And this is, again, this is what I'm using, going through this process with all my clients and recommending the book to them. Now, I have recently been getting hired to serve as a fractional CMO. And you work with probably hundreds, if not thousands, of marketers that have come through your course, read your book, et cetera. I would just love some honest advice or feedback for me as I kind of step in this new phase of my own entrepreneurial journey, coming into these companies and owning this role.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you some advice that someone else gave me many years ago, because I was in the same position as you. And I was asking questions like, you know, should I do one-on-one? Should I do group? Whatever. And what he said to me is, look, you want to build the business around your lifestyle, not your lifestyle around your business. So for me, the most important things were fun, freedom, flexibility. I wanted to live somewhere I wanted to live. I wanted to wear what, like in my previous businesses, I loved them and I had a good time and I made a lot of money. But, you know, I was in an office, I wore a suit, I was doing stuff that I didn't really love to do on a day-to-day basis. So when I started the current business, I built it completely around my lifestyle, figured out, okay, I said, all right, where do I want to live? And I thought, I want to live where everybody goes on holidays, you know, so I now do. I live in a place where really it's like a little holiday beach town. And then I'm like, what do I want my days to look like? I'm like, you know what? I want to work in a home office. I want to look out over the bay. I want to write a lot. I want to create content. So that was my starting point. So what do I want my life to look like? What does success look like? And then I built the business around that. So that's where I would start with, because I could give you advice on how to make this business a you know, super high revenue business, but it may not align with what you want. You may not want a high stress, high growth business because there's a price to pay for that. And conversely, I may give you advice on how to build a lifestyle business. And again, you may not want that. You may be like, no, look, I want to build this business really fast, high revenue, and then I want to exit this business. So that's a different strategy as well. So that's where I would start. I would say, what do you want your life to look like? What does success look like for you? And then let's build around that. So then we can figure out what the rules of engagement are. So then we might figure out, okay, based on your lifestyle factors, a group program may be the best for you, which means you have to say no to one-on-one consulting, or which means you may have to say no to speaking or traveling or whatever, right? So it really depends on that. So that's really where I would start with, because there's so many ways that you can do what you do right now. Like, you could deliver your knowledge through courses. You could deliver your knowledge through court programs. You could deliver your knowledge through one-on-one programs. You could deliver your knowledge through group. You could deliver your knowledge through live events. So all of those have pros and cons, and some of those will be highly aligned with what you want your lifestyle to be, and others will be completely opposed to what your lifestyle will be. Like, for example, although I do speak live from time to time, I don't love like traveling a lot for work, and it's kind of stressful, and you've got to be somewhere at a particular time, and then there's jet lag and all of that sort of stuff. So 95% of the time I say no to that, unless it's something that, wow, it's an amazing opportunity. There's an amazing group there. Okay, I'm going to be there. I'm going to make the sacrifice. So my default to that 95% of the time is no, because it doesn't align with my lifestyle, even though it's super profitable. Like, people pay ridiculous money for you to go and just do a 1-hour keynote, right? So that's where I would start, really. And there's, like I said, there's many, many ways to skin that cat and figure and make money. And you can do that in multiple ways. But that's where I would be starting with you, is figure out what does winning look like? What do you want your lifestyle to look like?
Well, Alan, I appreciate that. You know, it's funny when you have people that are 2, 3, you know, 10 years steps ahead of you. You know, we've got all these virtual mentors, people listen to on podcasts, we read your books. And, you know, when we come to you, sometimes you ask questions that we want, and you give us the questions that we really need. You're like, hey, that's, I can answer your question, but there's some other stuff that we need to talk about first, because I can only imagine how many people reach out to you and your team. Hey, come in, be our fractional, yada, yep, yada, yada. And then it creates a whole situation. But I will be honest with our audience. I'm at a new level of my entrepreneurial journey. The amount of income and the amount of impact I'm able to make, the amount of radical generosity I'm able to give out in the world is at a new level. It took a long time to get here. And so I am very appreciative of these opportunities. I still want to hone my craft a little bit, but I'm 100% with you on the lifestyle side of the house. Now, you've given us so much time, so much value. We have a community of underdogs and misfits tuning in from all over the country, all over the world. How can this community support you and everything your team is doing with lean marketing, the one-page marketing plan, and everything in between?
So I'm here to serve. Look, really, I've got a new book coming out. It's called Lean Marketing. This is my previous book, The One-Page Marketing Plan. I'm very proud of that. We've sold almost a million copies of that book, and I want lean marketing to be as much or more of a success. So the book comes out on May 7th. If you'd pre-order the book, that would massively be something that I would really, really appreciate. And if you left me a review on Amazon, that would be awesome. And I think you'll get a lot of value out of the book. The book covers those three major leverage points, the tools, assets, and processes, in a lot of detail. So I think you'll get a lot of value out of that.
So I'll be sure to purchase the book as soon as we get off. And then I owe you a review for the one-page marketing plan. Sorry it took me so long to get it. But good, you'll be happy that I've helped sell that book too, because I sent it to everyone. So thank I'll be sure that to include a link to that in the show notes. And all our listeners, be sure to subscribe to Dog Whistle Brandon newsletter at the link in the show notes as well. Until next time, peace, love. Have a great rest of your week. Dog Whistle Branding is brought to you by the team at Ironbound Media. where we blend strategy, storytelling, and podcasting to transform your brand into a dog whistle for your perfect customer. We believe that audio is the future of publishing, and we're committed to leading the movement. You can learn more by visiting our website, ironboundmedia.com. This series is powered by Mission Plus, a tech platform that helps nonprofit organizations upgrade their websites and leverage technology to deliver their services online. If your organization cares about its mission, then it needs to be built on Mission Plus. You can learn more by visiting missionplus.com.